Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power, Donna Sebo. And we've just got so much to share with you today, and I'm just delighted that you're able to join us. Let me start off with a quote before I introduce my guest. If you want to know your past, look into your present conditions. If you want to know your future, look into your present actions. This is a Chinese proverb that's in the very beginning of the book that my guest today has authored. It's called The Titleless Leader: How to Get Things Done When You're Not in Charge. Have you been in a situation where you don't have a title, but you find that you are the one that's depended upon to get things done? Nan Russell is my guest today, and we're going to be talking about this book that she has recently done and the things that she's learned. Nan is not a stranger to the workplace. Hi, Nan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Nan, you were sharing with me just before we went on the air that you do workshops and you're doing a lot of speaking. And I know that you have been involved in your workshops with people from all walks of life, everything from coal miners to Navy engineers. You talk to colleges, Fortune 100 corporations. You wrote a book previously called Hitting Your Stride. And you've got quite an educational background behind you. Where does your passion for the business world come from? Do you have any idea?
Well, you know, I actually think it came from my father. When I was growing up, he was a credit union manager, and he used to talk about some of the challenges that he had over the dinner table at night. And I was fascinated about the psychology behind the decisions and the people and the issues. And that, I think, was one of the reasons that led me into sort of the psychological field as it applies to the business world, because I kind of like the best of both, that the challenge of, you know, making a difference in business and the challenge of really seeing, like, why do we do what we do and how do we do it better?
This is a question: why do we do what we do and how do we do it better, that has been asked for millennia by anybody that was curious. And so often people are like little ducks, and they say, well, this person must be a leader, and they follow along. And I have someone that said to me once, it's fascinating, leadership often is misdefined, because if you use the example of little ducks, every little duck that's following the head duck is a leader, if you take that definition, because the one that's behind, the one that's in front of them, it's just going along, and the one that isn't considered very much of a leader is the one that's perhaps the back of a line. But sometimes the person at the back of a line could end up being a very fine leader and deciding to go into a different direction. I find it absolutely fascinating how people get into what I call mental boxes relative to business. Have you discovered this to be the case?
You know, I think you characterize it really well. And I think that people have sort of this set that comes either with how someone else has defined them or how they've defined themselves. And it is, we do kind of operate in those boxes, I think, and it keeps us pretty limited at times in how we're able to particularly maneuver when things change at work, as people have had to do because of the Great Recession.
Well, I think the recession, I call it a depression, so I'm just going to put in my 5 cents worth of opinion here, but I really feel that it's not just the change because of economics. I think that we've got changes with technology. I think that many times modalities that are established, you can use the term cultural, business environment modalities, they have shifted so dramatically. And what I find so incredible is how those people with entrepreneurial tendencies are the ones that typically break out. But there are so many people within corporate structures that are so valuable, and they may not even have a title. Explain to us what titleless leadership means to you.
Well, there's a couple of factors that really come into play with being a titleless leader. And one has to do with, you know, part of what you're describing, which is the workplace has changed and evolved over time naturally. And some of that means that, you know, people are asked to, you know, lead initiatives from whatever position they're in or deal with people across the world in, you know, virtual teams and do things based on the needs of the business and the technology that we have. And you aren't really ascribed, the necessarily a leadership role to do that, but you need to get results. And the second part of that really has happened, I think, is this shift where because of, you know, the way in which people can access information and the change in the workplace, title no longer means what it used to. There's kind of an era of distrust, and people look around and try to decide who it is that I'm going to follow or listen to. And actions now and behaviors are what's driving sort of this natural followership, and that's what titleless leaders are. They're people who are able to get results through what I call uncommon behaviors that just lead to other people want to work with them and be around them, and it's all centered on sort of the way in which people see other people as being a kind of behavioral integrity.
I think you've touched something that's quite significant, and I see it frequently among the younger generation who really is beginning, not is beginning, they have begun, and they are consistently following through. They want to see what you do. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to hear the hype. They want to know about you and what is it that is really, really special. Why should they support you? And I think that is very, very different from previous generations, where there was the indoctrination process. If someone is given a title, boy, you follow them or you're in the deep six. And it's fascinating to see how this has evolved, and I think a lot of it has to do with more effective communication when it comes to being able to link up and find out details and points of information. You could also, because of technology, you can get a lot of misinformation, and lies can be perpetuated in that way. But the thing you bring out in your book is operating with trust is extremely important. And a real leader is someone that is very responsible. This is a person that can be depended upon. This is a person that is going to lead by example. That is a real leader. And I think, really, it's always been the case, hasn't it? Why is it that we need to recognize it today differently?
Well, I think the reason that we need to look at it differently now is part of what you were just touching on. You know, when we all look at the things on the Internet, and we can't tell the difference between a real photograph and one that's been, you know, used computer wizardry to create something, you know, it's really hard to trust, you know, what we see. And when the kind of spin and headlines that happen about leaders that have happened about, you know, greed and misdeeds and steroids with athletes and all those kinds of things, we start to distrust the people that we listen to. And so how else do we kind of discern who should we trust? And so we're going back, it appears, to some very basic kinds of things, which is behavior, actions.
Mm-hmm.
You need to,
mm-hmm,
like, know
and
this person.
And I think
person.
That that's critical. I think that is very, very important. And we have had cycles historically where this has evolved again and again and again. And I think that this is something where there needs to be that expectation. And if you don't own that and behave responsibly, then that you're held accountable. I think that that is one of the biggest disappointments that the business people and even the youth that I have spoken with have expressed, they just don't have credibility, whatever the arena they might be in is. I really liked your sentence in your book. You said, individuals who effectively lead, with or without a title, understand that people work for people, not for companies. Wow, that is so significant. That is so significant because that's what the basis is. You're working with people. You're working with diverse personalities, different kinds of conditions. And you use the word authentic frequently. And I think that that is a very powerful word, being authentic. What does it mean to you relative to the title as leader?
The concept, authentic is one of those words I think that's used very frequently now. And I use it in the sense of, you know, kind of that inner sense to get to outer sense, inner core that then is demonstrated. So authentic is what I consider to be you show up as who you are from an inner side. So it's the good things. It's the best of who we are. And they're not necessarily the kinds of things we think about it. I think they're things like, you know, core strengths that most of us, all of us have, like integrity and tolerance and love and kindness. Those are things that if we're authentic to ourselves and to who we are inside, you can just tell that. I mean, there's a magnet about people who show up and have that vulnerability about, it's not the, you know, let me tweet everything that happened to me today. People misunderstand and think that being transparent is being authentic. And it's really a different concept. I can tell you everything that happened, but I may never be authentic. And authentic mm-hmm. is really, mm-hmm. you know, talking about, like, who you are from the inside out.
That's true. That is very true. And I think that that is something that has to be acquired, that understanding. Because being really authentic, there is really a feel that people will get about another person. There is just that feel. And I think it's so important. You have a comment. You talk about Tom Rath, and he has a strength assessment tool. It's called Strength Finders 2.0. And you make a statement that operating from strengths means adding knowledge, discipline, practice, and hard work to make our innate talents come alive. I find that many people get discouraged because they will say, gee whiz, I've got a long way to go. Well, who doesn't? Everybody has a long way to go. And it's just these little tiny baby steps that we take through life that eventually all of a sudden we look back and we realize that we've covered tens of thousands of miles, figuratively speaking, and we go, wow, you mean I really did that? And those qualities that we admire in others that we want in ourselves, we have to realize it took them time to get there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's this, in this instant messaging world, we think there should be instant results. And mm-hmm. so people get very discouraged, you know, if they do have a talent or a strength in an area and they think they should be, you know, able to win American Idol or able to do whatever they are passionate about doing. And there's a great story that I love, you know, that people have probably heard about Beethoven. You know, when somebody asked him, like, gee, I wish I was as talented as you. I wish I could, you know, do what you do. And he says, hey, you know, I've been practicing 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day for the last 40 years. If you do that, you can be like me too. And I think we forget that. Like, we can mm-hmm. take our strengths, but we have to enhance them. Because, you know, it's not like you started out day one, you know, being a radio host. You had to develop all the skills that you have to be able to do the things that you do. And I think that's true for all of us.
That's true. That is very true. A couple of comments in your book are, engaged people are creative and resourceful, producing quality results and consistent contributions beyond job descriptions. I think the title, those leaders that have no title, I have found in my observations through the years, and I think of a gentleman that I knew that was in charge of a service department, and he eventually got the job, and got job description, I should say, of being the service manager. But this was a man that everyone in this particular service department turned to. He was sort of a quiet guy. He was always there a little bit earlier before anybody else. If anybody needed help, he gave it to them. If he didn't know, he'd say, let's find out. And when I reflect, I hadn't thought of him in years, and when I was reflecting on this comment in your book, he came into my mind. And I'll call him Bob just for the heck of it. When Bob finally was made service manager, there wasn't one person in his department that did not feel he deserved it. And he had challenges with some of his employees, and he'd be very quiet about it. He said, this is what's come up. Now, how are we going to handle it? What are we going to do? And this man led by example and was so highly regarded, and respected. He never was concerned that the people around him be in love with him, like some people want to have that happen. He wasn't there. He said, this is what I do. But you could trust him. He was reliable. He was consistent. He was there. He was innovative. He was open to new ideas. And this man, when I knew him, he was in his 50s. So he didn't get his title, if you will, until he reached his 50s. But he was this person that developed all of this understanding, knowledge, and wisdom, and just had this knack with people. And it was quite challenging.
Well, you know, it's interesting because what you just described is such a good example of, you know, what it is that causes people to want to work with someone like Bob and see that Bob really makes a difference. And that orientation, like I think so many of us get it backwards. You know, I hear people say all the time, well, you know, if you give me the title or if you pay me enough, then I'll do what I need to do. Instead of do what you need to do and do it the way you describe Bob doing it, then, you know, you'll get paid what you are contributing. And even, I think, when you take it outside of the sort of pay mode, titleless leaders are people who do those kinds of things like you describe Bob doing because it's the right thing to do, because, you know, they have a service attitude, an attitude of contribution, one that looks at sort of the bigger world and the way in which they can affect it. And it is a different way of operating.
I think it's invaluable. I think it's timeless. I think any good leader should be that way, whether they have a title or not. And
yeah,
I think that in your book you cover a lot of very good information. Now, one of the points you bring out are titleless leaders value other people's time because they value other people. Oh, boy, could I relate to that particular sentence. We have a member of our family who always was late. Now, I'm not talking about 5 minutes here. I'm talking about a half hour, an hour. Well, this person had a very interesting experience. This individual, very successful business person, just brilliant individual, had this habit from the time he was in high school. Always late. Everything. Well, it would drive people crazy. Absolutely drove his spouse nuts. Didn't pay any attention until one day he had a meeting with some executives, and he was really, really late, and they were really miffed. These people had been waiting an hour and a half or something like this, and what occurred is that he had an associate that called him to task and said, you kept us waiting for XYZ time. And my feeling is that you value us so little that you didn't even give us the courtesy of a phone call to say that you were on your way and late, number one. And number two, that you disregarded that we have other responsibilities and commitments ourselves. Don't ever do this again. Well, it's Sunday. this person was just stunned. And this person had been doing this for years. But it wasn't until that individual called him to account. And today, they have a little bit of it, but they are mindfully present that they do not do this. They lost faith at such a degree. It really hit them. Somebody really got to them. And finally, they realized what they had been doing for most of their life.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that people, you know, don't necessarily recognize this, that some of their, what some of their actions are communicating to other people. And time is one of those things that, you know, I think recently with, in the last 10 years or so, and certainly with the millennium generation and some of the changes that have happened, you know, we all recognize the importance of time, but we, the people who use it as a currency to show value and respect, it goes like, it just says so much that you know, that words don't say, because they're pretty meaningless if you're not paying attention to that. And the less time we have, the more it's being valued.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so significant. That is so very, very important. Now, you touch on a part of the human personality that I think often is looked at as being weak, and it's far from that. And that is the aspect of compassion, thoughtfulness, kindness. And I love the story about your mom and how she was traveling alone one winter on a train from Montana via Minneapolis to Sioux City, Iowa. Your brother was 18 months old. You need to share this story, because I think this is something we need to remember.
It's definitely one of those stories that impressed me my whole life. But as you were describing, my mom was traveling alone, and she had my brother. I wasn't born yet, and all the paraphernalia that goes along with that. And, you know, it was totally a different time, obviously. And the conductor of the train encouraged her to disembark on the least trafficked side of the train, and that she would be able to get her stuff off easier. And so he helped her get her stuff off, and it was on the platform, and then she's gathering it up. And as she's starting to walk toward the station, an older woman kind of picks up a few of her items and walks along with her, and it turns out to be the former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. And my mother was so amazed by not only her kindness, but just the naturalness of that, that she, there wasn't a title or an ego attached to it. It was just one person doing a kindness for another. And it not only impacted my mother's life and ours, but I have a friend who has a 10-year-old daughter who read that story in draft form, and she did this major report on Eleanor Roosevelt, and she now has this vision of what kindness looks like, all because of a simple action that was natural to her. And I think mm-hmm. those are the kinds of things we forget. We don't know what our actions really, how they impact people. And it's a real good example of that. I mean, it wasn't just that it was Eleanor Roosevelt. It was the sense that, you know, people who do act kindly to other people, it impacts your day. It makes you feel valued and important. And, you know, life's pretty tough. It's nice when we can help people get through it.
Oh, I agree. And when I read that story about Eleanor Roosevelt, I thought of how much, you know, how your mind will go back, it'll flip-flop back. When have you had experiences where someone has done something very nice, you don't know who that person is, you don't know where they came from, why they're there, but they, in a moment, gave you a helping hand, or was very thoughtful and kind in how they talked with you, or expressed a belief in you and supported you in some way. And when we can start going back in our minds about those various people and situations, we realize there is a lot of beauty in the human character. And it's those actions that create what I call the hope, the purpose, the value in life. And we do have a tremendous impact on others. And in your chapter that you have in your book, Titleless Leadership, Making It Personal, I really enjoyed this because I think that you have to be very real if you're going to be a leader. You have to be unafraid of acknowledging that you, to put it bluntly, screwed up in life at times. There isn't anyone that doesn't do it, but it's a very tough thing for us to do sometimes because we feel like we're going to lose face, but usually it's not that way at all. But you make a comment, and this one really stuck with me very strongly because of an experience I had at a speaking engagement day before yesterday. You say, it doesn't take much to know to let someone know he's valued. Most people don't want plaques or dust-gathering stuff. They want and need someone noticing and appreciating that they gave up their weekend plans to finish a last-minute critical project, designed and executed an idea that improved the department or worked tirelessly to serve a key client or accommodate a change in organizational priorities. I was talking with a businesswoman who is a chairperson for a chamber of commerce. She's very dedicated to action in the community. And she told me a story about working for an employer. And the employer was a very stoic type of person. And there was a conversation that she was having, and it had to do with raise. Well, the company was in such a situation they couldn't give raises to anyone. But this person did take the time to say, you need to know that you're a valued employee, and this is why you're valued, by me. And she said, thank you. I value that more than I do the raise. Mm-hmm. And we discussed that. And she said, so often conflict she has found, and of course she's of an entrepreneurial disposition herself, she's in a business of her own, but she said so often conflicts evolve within many companies because there is a lack of recognition or appreciation in a sincere way. Plaques are nice, but people want to know that they're valued. And just that conversation that she had with her employer at the time that it occurred made all the difference in the world. She went home. She felt terrific. And it wasn't about the money.
And I think that's so crucial, is because people think if they don't have a budget to give an increase or to give a little bonus, or that they can't offer appreciation or recognition and that that's what people want. And, you know, that story is so true. Most of us, you know, just an acknowledgement that somebody noticed what we did and how we did it, you do remember, and it spurs that motivation. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about, you know, you, but I certainly know in my own life, the people who at least acknowledge and recognize that, you know, you went the extra mile and you contributed, you just really want to do more for them.
Absolutely. You want to be there for them. Look at the hundreds of thousands of people that volunteer. Never get paid a penny.
Right.
But they do it because they feel that they're contributing to something that is needed. It brings value into their life, and they're recognized. And they're not getting paid a penny for this. And they're people of all ages. There's kids, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 80s, and even early 90s. And that's something that I think too often people that do have titles forget.
I think they do too. And I think, you know, all of us need a sense that what we do in the world matters. And when somebody acknowledges that it does, you know, it's unfortunate that people forget how powerful that is.
Absolutely true. And I like the section that you have on success. Your question is, what does success look like to you? But what you find is people today are wanting to measure success by leaving the world a bit better for having been here. And I think that is a wonderful objective for anyone, however you choose to express it. And I want people to know, because I know we're just about out of time, your website is The Titleless Leader, thetitlessleader.com. Nan Russell has been my guest. This is how to get things done when you're not in charge. But it's even more than that. You're going to find that it will resonate with you because you'll say, I can identify with this. So if you're in business for yourself, if you are working for someone else, titles are fine, but who are you? How can you represent who you are with the integrity, purpose, and a sense of self-esteem that can be an example for other people? In other words, you walk your walk. I think Nan Russell's book goes a long way towards making that happen. Nan, thank you for being my guest today. Titleless Leader is the title of the book. Check it out. This is Donna. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And telephone lines are now open. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, hey, give me a buzz. I will be delighted to do that. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, well, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. So give me a buzz if you like during the next half hour, 888-627-6008. Well, the big event is coming up. Big event, what is it? It is the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I've been a participant in this fabulous activity, and it is, my goodness, I think it's 13, 14 years now that I've been doing it. This is an event that's taking place in Western Washington at the Kelly Farm in Varney Lake, and the first three weekends in August is when it happens. That's the tradition, the first three weekends in August. And it is awesome. And I have family passes to give away. So if you would like to get a free family pass to the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair, those of you who are listening from Western Washington, give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, or send an email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. But call me, that's quicker. I only have 20 free family passes, two adults, two children. And it is a marvelous event. You can also go to the website, WashingtonFair.com, and the fair has an E on the end of it, so WashingtonFair, FAIRE.com. Check it out, but get in touch with me. Those 20 passes are going to go very, very quickly. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888 627 6008. Electricity is vital to just about everything that we have in our lives. And if you don't believe that, wait until you have a power outage and you go, oops, now what do I do? How do I generate electricity? What can I do to make sure that things continue to work? Our society has evolved a very sophisticated level of technology because of the utilization of electricity. Well, lights, Thomas Edison, he invented a light bulb that is still burning in some museum. It's just incredible what we have been able to do. Can you imagine what it was like for people when they became aware that they could power up their homes, their environment, and be able to read? There was a long, long time where you read like Abraham Lincoln is so noted for and studied by the light of a fire. People had to go to bed when the sun went down. You couldn't see. Candles were used or oil lamps of different types, but it really, really was a significant change. Well, today, because we've learned how to utilize electricity so effectively, we are learning even more, especially when it comes to light. Now, fluorescent light bulbs, which have been around for a long, long time, use 75% less energy and last 10 times longer than your traditional incandescent bulbs. However, you want to make sure that you are not having to pay out more money relative to the use of certain lights than you would have imagined. So, what you want to do, if you have a fluorescent light bulb, you need to know some information that will help you save some money. And I know we've got a caller, so before I get into those details, let me go to the caller first. Welcome you to the show. What's your first name or initial, please, and where are you calling in from?
Angeline. I'm calling from San Francisco.
Oh, hi, Angeline. Welcome to the show. Delighted to have you. Okay. First thing that I'm looking at, Evangeline, is that you are going to have to say no to someone that is going to want you to be involved in what I call a repair project. Now, when I say a repair project, I feel like this is an emotional situation that they are in, and it's not a healthy one. If you find yourself feeling like, gee whiz, you should be part of the rescue team to assist this person, you need to stand back and ask yourself why. Because this is just not going to work. It's not going to work. You're going to feel like you've been suckered in. You need to deal with the facts. Now, one of the things that I'm looking at, Angeline, with you, is you're a romantic at heart. You have this wonderful attitude about life that I think is very optimistic, and I wouldn't want you to ever lose that. You don't need to lose that part of yourself. But I want you to be more discerning. I want you to realize that you can look at facts with a clarity, good, bad, or indifferent, see them for what they are, and know how to make your decisions appropriately. I feel like you are in a very intense learning cycle relative to this. And discernment is something that comes with experiment and experience. And this is something where sometimes you beat yourself up because you feel like, oh, boy, have I made some big humdingers of mistakes. That's all right. Join the rest of humanity. We all do. But discerning, not being Pollyannish in the sense of, oh, everything's absolutely marvelous. Everything isn't always absolutely marvelous, but it's okay to look at it and then say, all right, how do I work with this so I make it into something that's valued? Or do I just dump it in the garbage? What do I do? You're learning how to take charge of who you are, who you choose to interact with, what you choose to focus on. So this is a learning curve. I want you not to beat yourself up because you feel like there's some things that you've done that are so dumb and so stupid. That's all right. You learn from it and you move on. And it's going to enable you to find the venue of career that really is going to be most meaningful to you. But it takes the discernment. And some of the labels that you have bought into that are valued by others, one of them being the sacrificial martyr syndrome, I want to say you're dumping that this year. You're not going to be volunteering for duty. And you're going to have somebody that's very upset with you, that's even going to tell you to your face either that you're very narcissistic, you're totally selfish, you just don't understand how important it is that you do things their way. I mean, they're really going to try to flatten you so that you will capitulate. But I'm seeing you with clear eyes looking at this person and saying, I respect your opinion. I don't agree with it, but I understand why you're feeling this way, but I cannot participate. And I'm seeing you turning and walking away. Now, you'll use your own words, but I'm watching you, and I'm seeing where, even a year ago, tears would have come to your eyes. You would have just said, oh, my goodness, I need to do this. This is the right thing to do, blah, blah. And you started to wake up to realize that you're being manipulated. So that's a good thing. What question would you like to ask me today?
Well, Donna, thank you so much for that. I love your radio show. I listen every day. It's part of my work routine. And yesterday I went on an interview, and I just wanted to know if you could give me some insight or feedback as to how I can interview better or how that interview went, and if they call me back for a second one or if I go on another one, what knowledge I could bring to that new experience.
All right. Let's see what we can help you with. What I'm looking at, first of all, is you're making it harder than you need to. All you have to do is recognize what your strengths are, and I mean that most sincerely. Because if you know what your strengths are, you're not 65, 70 years of age where you can say, I have 35 years of experience in doing this. No, you don't. But you're in the process of development, which is how you should approach this. What kind of job are you looking for?
Well, I would like to use my artistic skills and become an artist, but I also want to be a person that offers service and art.
All right. Let's look at some different venues that you could approach. I don't know what positionings you've been looking at. And I don't know what your educational background is. But what I would say is this. You've pointed two very good points. The creative side, let me use a bigger word than just art, creativity and service. Well, you could be in an advertising department. You could be involved in helping people design logos or things that are going to go out for publication. You could be involved with hotels where you could be a banquet facilitator, convention facilitator. My point is that what you've got here enters into a number of different arenas. So what I would like for you to do, when you are at an interview, because you specifically were asking how can you present yourself better in an interview, look at those strong points. Look at the fact that you enjoy, one, working with people, two, you like the challenge of creating something new, being a problem solver, and three, you want to be a part of an environment that is going to encourage ongoing education and support of innovative ideas, not unlike the way the staff at Google often is encouraged to be. And some of the other companies that are really moving forward. So you want to be a part of a team. Those qualities you can share and emphasize in an interview, but you also need to interview the company. You need to find out what their objectives are. So when you are presented and you are interviewed by someone, and they're going to want to listen to what means most to you, those points that I've just given are very important. But you also need to ask about their company. What is it that means the most to the management of the company? Be interested in their business and be able to do some research before you go do the interview. And that's going to give you an edge. And you need to be okay when you go in for interviews where they say, well, I don't know what this is going to be. You say, that's perfectly all right. Because if I'm the right person, you're going to know it. Thank you for this opportunity. And leave with this presence that you are in control of who you are. And whether they're the person or the environment that chooses you, you still walk away not feeling disempowered, but empowered. We've got to go on break here. Will you stay with me for a moment?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to come back with Angeline. We're going to take a break. Call-in number is 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Before I go back to Angeline, I want to let you know tomorrow we're going to be discussing a healing clay that Native Americans used for generations. Its name is Pascalite. This is amazing. I use it myself, and I wanted the story about the family that produces this. It's out of the hills of Wyoming. Their story is just incredible. So I wanted to have you become aware of it. And we're going to be talking with Jean Lockard tomorrow. This wonderful stuff. The story is just amazing. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. Meanwhile, let's go back to Angeline. Angeline, let me ask you a question there. Did what I share with you help you?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I've spread the word.
Good. Well, I'm delighted. I so appreciate your comments about the show. Thank you very much, and I'm glad that you're able to join us because we shifted the show from an afternoon positioning here on the West Coast to morning, and I'm so delighted that you were able to continue listening to the program.
Thank you so much for your information.
You're welcome, hon. Take care. This is Donna Sebo. We've got open phone lines at 888-627-6008. We were talking about titleless leaders, and I wanted to share a story. This is a real story about an athlete by the name of John Landy. Now, I'm not a person that is a real sports enthusiast, but I still love the stories because I think sports are invaluable. I think that for young people, They really teach disciplines. They help to keep them occupied, enable them to utilize their energy, especially when they're growing up. I think sports with good coaches are just invaluable as lessons for life. I just think it's incredible. Well, there was an Australian by the name of John Landy. And when I came across this information, I thought, I've got to share it with you, because if you didn't know about John Landy, you will know about him now. He made history. How did he do that? He became the second man to break the four-minute mile 46 days after Roger Bannister became the first in 1954. So we're stepping back a little bit in time. Now, in Australia, Landy is highly, highly regarded. He ended up serving as the 26th governor of Victoria. And the reason he won the election, I think you'll find this interesting, in part was because of the mile race he ran in the 1956 Australian National Championships. This makes a difference. This is what happened in that spectacular race. It was the third lap in the race. There was another participant. His name is Ron Clark. He was 19 years old. He would go on to set 17 world records during his career. In this race, he tripped and he fell. John Landy, who was right behind him, leaped over Clark as he fell and accidentally scraped Clark's arm with his spikes in the process. This is something that can happen in a sport. But this is what John Landy did. He stopped running to make sure that Clark wasn't badly hurt before he resumed the race. And it was quite a race because he now was behind everybody and he was chasing the pack. That's how it was described, because they were moving. Nobody stopped. And these guys are running pretty fast. The crowd went crazy. Even though Landy stopped, checking on Clark, making sure he was okay, he came from behind to finish first in a time of 4 minutes, 4 seconds. 4 minutes, 4 seconds. These many years later, whenever he's asked about this incredible race that he ran, he said, I just reacted on the spur of the moment. You do things like an embedded impulse. You don't ask why. That action established his true character in the minds of those that saw what he did. That trait of character made all the difference in the world. That is what we were discussing in Titleist Leadership. Who are you? How do you live your life? Because you do make a difference. I think of the kindness of people that I've experienced on so many different levels in my life, whether I was mature, whether I was very young, that many times enabled me to look past what seemingly was very, very dark, that I didn't think there was any value in who I was or what I was. Gee, I'd never be able to achieve anything. How many of us feel that way? I think quite a few. Maybe we've done some things that we figure are a dark blot on our life. But I'll tell you something. If you don't have those dark blots, if you don't live life, you can't be in a cocoon. And if you don't dare to risk, if you don't dare to try, if you don't dare to challenge, you're never going to know what it is to fall down and how to pick yourself up. But many times, there are those individuals, sometimes you'll never, ever know their name. And they'll express to you with sincerity and integrity that they believe in you, that they know that there is value in who you are as a person. So you pick yourself up and you move on. Be a leader in your own life. You don't need to be too concerned about leading other people. But have integrity, personal principle, personal pride, as my friend Steve Agbaba used to say. Personal pride. And be honorable. And I'll guarantee you, your light's going to be seen by a lot of people, and you may inspire someone that you will never know. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, have a magnificent day. Join me again tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.